What is up, fellow Suplexians? We are back at it again. It is me, Neeks, VSP Neeks. I'm here with my man, Chris. We are in the building. We are here to recap Bad Blood. Chris, how are we feeling, man? It's good to be back. It's been a little bit.
Oh, feeling good, feeling great. We got episode 3.5 out a few weeks back, but I think we're finally settled in to be back on a normal schedule, the every 2 week rotation. But stick with us, guys. We're working out the kinks. This new show, Value of the Suplex, we just launched. But man, what a pay-per-view we just had this last weekend at Bad Blood. I'm excited to get into it.
Yeah, lots and lots to talk about, man. Very exciting. I felt like we were kind of owed one after Bash in Berlin. Was a little bit of a snooze fest. I'm not going to pull punches. Let's just jump into it, man. I was a little curious to see how this was going to go because Bad Blood has not really been a pay-per-view in quite some time. Honestly, I thought WWE did a really good job. Everything down to the merch to the logo, everything looked like super clean and super crisp. I thought it was a really good presentation on WWE's end. They're subtly adding the sponsorships, which I like. It's not like, yeah, we do have the Prime bottle in the middle of the ring, but like the other sponsorships, it's not like it's, you know, being shoved down your throat like it was, with the Bray Wyatt Mountain Dew Pitch Black match, where like everything was like a Mountain Dew logo, or, you know, like I really do enjoy the fact that like we're kind of getting into the subtlety of it. Makes a product a little bit more enjoyable and a little less cartoony. Let's jump in the first match. We all can't shoot 100%, you know. I think we're all in general consensus that we thought that the first match on this card was going to absolutely suck. We thought that we had seen it. We thought that there wasn't anything that Drew and Punk could do. And then, man, I don't know, Chris, we turned on that match and it was an absolute barn burner, man. It looked like WWE had been doing something different with the camera angles, so the cage wasn't in the way as much. You had a lot of blood and gore. I mean, it's Bad Blood, so you got to figure at some point blood is going to be drawn. But man, we saw some real deal violence in this match. For those who don't know, Drew McIntyre got his head split open about halfway through the match. And it required about 14 staples, they said. Split it up with the toolbox, which is a callback to a previous match they had. Can't hate that, but man, 14 staples in the dome piece, and then to keep wrestling for another 15 minutes is crazy to me. I don't know, man. That felt like an old school WWE match to me, just really gritty. What did you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. It almost like was close to reminding me of like the ECW, like no rules kind of days, and like what I really enjoyed watching when I was a kid, which is kind of crazy to say, but it was weird. It's like we all showed up for this Hell in a Cell cage match, and then a toolbox match broke out. It was wild the way they're going back and forth with the wrenches. There's going to be a lot of points during our conversation here, breaking this down, the pay-per-view overall, where I say, that was ridiculous. That was a little hokey. You could tell. I mean, this match went on for over 30 minutes. You could tell these guys were absolutely gassed, lost blood, had a lot of sweat. Don't know if they had prime energy before that or not. But I just really thought it was funny at one point. It might have been right here, close to it, when CM Punk is going for the submission and Drew McIntyre holds up the wrench, but he can't quite get it far enough to do anything with it. So CM Punk just takes it out of his hand. I thought it was hilarious, but no, you could tell by the end, these guys were gassed. Some of the moves they were throwing just weren't being sold as well as they were earlier in the match, but man, props to Drew McIntyre. I mean, you can even see here in this picture, he's got quite a bit of red flowing through his mane there.
Yeah, man, honestly, it's, I got to eat some words here. I think the last pay-per-view match that we saw CM Punk in, or excuse me, PLE match that we saw CM Punk in, I called him old. I said he looked old. He didn't look that old in this match, man. He looked crisp. Everything looked like together for me. I did think the wrench was a little gimmicky. I did think it was funny because we're playing that like passing out role, but we know that Drew was nowhere near passing out. I thought that the callbacks, Punk obliterating McIntyre with that toolbox, is a callback to shit. I think Hart and Austin had a submission match in 97. It was a nice callback to that, where the toolbox was used. I don't think either one of those men cracked their skull wide open, but I mean, even if you look, man, at one point, I thought it was cute, and that's exactly the word I'm going to use, cute, that WWE threw in the towel to the referee to wipe Drew's face and Corey Graves on commentary, because they can't cut away from that. There's no, if they're in a cell, there's no way you're cutting away from that. Corey goes, yeah, they just got him a towel to, you know, make sure he can see what he's doing. And it's like, well, yeah, no, that's a Crimson Mask that we haven't seen in quite some time in WWE. And yeah, like you said, very reminiscent of those like ECW, like all violent, like barbed wire affairs. The one thing I did like is that this whole thing has kind of been, they tried to make this very personal. When Punk shoved the beads into McIntyre's mouth, I thought that was a great callback. I think Drew taking the bump on top of those beads on the steel case, it was a great bump by Drew. I can't imagine that feels good. I mean,
I was thinking the same thing, man. I was like, bro, props to you, man. You're not going to catch me doing that.
No, man. I mean, honestly, it's funny when you think of the ways that these guys figure out how to take bumps. And it's like, you know, thumbtacks is the most cliche, I guess, of all now, because you see guys bringing out Legos and you see guys bringing out beads. And it's like the shit that you step on when your kid's, you know, making a mess. Like, that's the stuff that they're throwing each other onto now.
But it's relatable, right? Because, I mean, and anybody, especially, you know, with kids now, and we were all kids, and then now as adults with kids, you know, you step on a Lego, especially in the dark at 1 a.m. That's no joke.
Yeah, no, you know how I have a 10-year-old daughter who is very into Taylor Swift. So the bracelet making is strong in this house. And I have stepped on a couple of those beads barefooted, and them son of a bitches hurt. So I can't imagine, you know, I know that those steps at the end of the day are probably some sort of aluminum, but it's still metal at the end of the day, man. You're cracking down on metal and bead, that's not going to feel great.
Yeah, I was going to say earlier, I don't know, maybe the toolboxes were softer back then, and that's why he wasn't getting busted open. But no, regardless, whether it's aluminum or whatever, like, still going to hurt. Still gonna feel it, and the beads, man. I did think it was an interesting choice to start with the Hell in a Cell match. I didn't initially know that was the case, but it kind of makes sense. It was like the 27th anniversary to the day of the very first Hell in a Cell match, and from my perspective, I mean, it makes sense if you think about how they probably do it logistically. But I was like, this ring was destroyed by the time these guys were done with it, like blood and beads and stairs everywhere. But you know, they probably just ripped off that top cover, tossed a new one on there, and they were ready to go.
Oh, for sure, dude. I mean, Alyssa and I went to the last Hell in a Cell, that the pay-per-view that pretty much existed in Chicago in 2022. And there was no blood in that, but they changed the tarp pretty quickly in between those matches. I can only imagine that the crew was quick at work. Man, honestly, like, CM Punk came out the victor. I kind of figured that's how that was going to end up. At least you kind of hope that's how it would end up. He's had a pretty good run since being back in WWE. All things considered, his track record at AEW and all the backstage fights and all the shenanigans. It's safe to say, man, I think I've completely turned the corner on CM Punk, and I might be a full CM Punk fan all over again. You know, growing up as a John Cena fan, it was kind of always fuck you, CM Punk. But, you know, there is footage of me somewhere from an AEW where I am crotch chopping Nick and Matt Jackson screaming fuck CM Punk. There's footage of that somewhere, but I recant that now. His run in WWE, I think, has been actually really good, injury included. So bravo to that. I thought it was a great way to end the match. A little bit of overkill with the medics, especially because CM Punk's oxygen bag didn't like inflate. So he's like sitting there and he just takes it off, and It was the best pull from CM Punk, but he takes the mask off, and audibly you hear him go, "I just want my damn wife," and walks up the ramp. And it's like, yep, I think most married men in that situation would probably just want their wife. Get this fucking oxygen tank off of me that's not hooked up to oxygen. I just thought that was very funny. We're going to slide into – yeah, bro. Look at this thing. I don't know if it's like the airport ones where it's supposed to stay flat like that, but like they have a cord coming in. This thing should be, I feel like, inflated.
You know they didn't waste any fucking money getting actual oxygen. I agree with what you said, especially CM Punk's perspective. He's like, I just put my whole body on the line for 30 plus minutes. Get me the fuck out of here so I can go be with my wife and enjoy the rest of my night.
I am drenched in another man's blood. Get me the fuck off this stage.
I mean, I need a shower. He
came out red, dude. Like, crazy, crazy. But honestly, I thought it was a great match. Totally surprised by it. I'll leave my word, CM Punk, the Second City Saint, won me over on that one. The next match, God almighty, somebody help me. Dude, we keep doing this Nia Jax thing. And, you know, then my only reprieve was that we were going to get a Tiffy cash in, that Tiffany Stratton was going to cash the briefcase in, and that maybe, just maybe, we wouldn't have to suffer another Nia Jax championship match. But lo and behold, man, I should have known when it was brought up to be Bayley, we weren't going to get any of that. There was a couple of, like, good moves that Bayley had in here. She had a roll up on Nia Jax that was super clean. Nia Jax tried a Hurricane Rana. Man, was that botch central. Good night, Irene. I mean, dude, Bayley had to sell it. And like Nia might be just too big to be doing that. I don't know, man. This picture really does kind of sum it up. This is how she won the match. By just sitting on Bayley after jumping off the top rope with that dumb finishing move.
Dude,
even down to like her get up, you know, like my wife made a comment, like, why does she always dress like she's wrestling in Saudi? And it's like, yeah, that's the damn truth, man. She's always wearing full length bodysuits. I mean, she looks like a Bratz doll. Like, nothing about Nia Jax is hitting for me. The look, the character, the gimmick, this irresistible force, whatever you want to call it, it's not fucking hidden for me. This match was plain boring for me. I know a lot of people, back Nia because she's good in the locker room, but dude, just ain't me. When you have to look at it and Michael Cole, the best thing about this match was a comment by Michael Cole about how this was a New York Mets style thrashing. That's the best takeaway of the whole fucking match. Is Michael Cole making a Mets reference? Michael Cole, who was on his A game this entire pay-per-view, mind you, him calling out Lil Baby, him calling out Quavo, like that was gold star stuff. When he said, "Hey, we have Lil Baby here," and they didn't cut the camera to Lil Baby, and then they cut the camera back, and he goes, "There he is, my favorite artist." And as Michael Cole just going ape shit about Lil Baby, it had me dying. But yeah, no, this match was just not great. The ref bump was so funny.
Yeah.
But so bad. It was not supposed to be funny.
You saw it coming like the entire way. Like the second, like the ref's just like on all fours, like waiting, like, all right.
Oh my All right, God.
What are we doing? Like,
bro, I rewound it, and it's like you literally watch Nia stick her hand out and Bayley grab her hand to stay. Like, it's the worst ref bump I've ever seen, to the point where it's fucking hysterical. Like, I watched it again the next day with my daughter, and it was fucking hysterical. Like, it was by far, and honestly, Nia didn't pull any punches. She put all that body weight right on top of Jessica Carr. And she flattened like a fucking mouse. Do I like the Tiffany Stratton cash-in attempt? Fuck no, dude. Cash-in, I'm so sick of that. I hate that. Like, we're going to tease it. And then, like, if she hands the briefcase to the ref, man, in my eyes, you've cashed in. Like, that's in the story. Like, because as a fan watching, I don't know what's being said between Tiffy and fucking the referee. I have to assume if this mega goddess of a woman hands over the briefcase to the referee, that then, like, she's cashing in. So, like, they did that with Austin Theory's run a couple years ago where, like, he would just try to cash in and be repeatedly, like, stopped to the point where it was like, I'm not even excited to hear his fucking music anymore.
You just don't believe that it's actually going to happen. Like,
yeah,
that was my exact thought. I was like, no. Like, she handed it, like, she was handing it to the ref. The ref had their hands on it. And there are several times in the course of this whole pay-per-view where the refs, you know, fucked up. Obviously that was their direction, I'm sure. But it was just like, man, come on, like, let's get some better writing in here. Because, like, if I'm Triple H, I'm going out and being like, nah, you either cash in right now or you lose the briefcase. What do you want to do? And then make him fight for it. But no, of course not. We just get this lame little fucking tease, and then it's over. I just think everything you said is, like, on point, man. Like, the whole referee getting flattened and knocked out, like, perfectly sums up the entire thing. And I just, for me, like, being, you know, fairly new in the past, you know, several months coming back into this, Nia Jax is either, like, a great heel or she's just an insufferable person. And I haven't landed on what it is yet.
Yeah, I don't, you know, man, honestly, like, I'm, the Money in the Bank is so fucking electric. Like, the idea of having a briefcase that allows you to just essentially steal a title. I mean, when she came in, flattened Bayley, I was like, this is over. She's cashing in the fucking briefcase. She's going to pin Nia 1-2-3, and then we're going to have a Tiffany Stratton run, which, mind you, is going to be better than probably Bayley's run and Nia Jax's run combined, because Tiffany's a character. Bayley's not a character. Bayley's a weird shell of what Bayley used to be mixed with what Bayley like was with Damage Control. And Nia Jax is just fucking Nia Jax. Like, it's just, it is what it is. But yeah, man, not a great match. Honestly, this might be a hot take, but I actually think it might be a better match than the next match that came up. We had Finn Balor and Damian Priest, and boy, howdy, was nobody in the building excited for this. It was fucking crickets. I don't think they did a great job of, like, really making Balor be believable. honestly, that's kind of my issue with this whole new Judgment Day, is that it instead of feeling like a group of friends or like a cohesive unit, it feels like a bunch of ragtag misfits that are just all hanging out together.
Yeah, literally.
You know, like, it really feels like Trips looked at the roster and was like, who's not doing anything? Carlito? Judgment Day. JD McDonagh? Judgment Day. Like, I know they all had, like, ends to the actual Judgment Day, but, like, man, it just, like, the Finn, Damian Priest, Rhea, Dominic Mysterio Judgment Day was a believable heel group. This, like, Finn's not, I don't know, dude, I've been saying this, but, like, I want Finn as a face. I don't need Finn as a heel. He's a good face, and, like, honestly, he has one of the more iconic entrances as a face when he, like, points to the sky and the entire crowd is, like, pointing to the sky with him. And it's this, like, epic fucking moment. Like I caught it the last time it happened in Chicago. And, like, I mean, just immediate, like, goosebumps. It's a vibe, and it makes you want to root for him. You don't get that with the heel aspect. He came out in the goofy mask. He's been doing that weird mask thing lately. Apparently there was one tier for Rhea, one tier for Damian, and then the stripe down the middle was for the line that they both crossed. But the fact of the matter is that he had to explain that. So probably not great. But yeah, he came out, had that funky little eye black under his eye. I don't know what he was doing there. Like,
yeah,
game 7 status, like, really not sure what the hell was going on, but just honestly fucking boring, man. This is it just doesn't make the Judgment Day look good, because they came out to save Finn. Damian still walks out. Like, you know, like, I don't, it makes the Judgment Day look not like a threat at all. you couldn't win with three dudes. You had three motherfuckers, dude. Like, you couldn't win with three dudes. Like, you didn't. I'd much rather it had been like a DQ or something, but like, yeah, not a great match. Priest defeats Balor. At one point, Priest yeeted Balor across the announce table. That's about the most like high, you know, that's our highlight there. So if that doesn't tell you anything, next we were teased with a historic announcement.
Oh boy.
Oh man, when those words are put together in the wrestling world, it is just basically code for we're getting another belt. And what the fuck happened? We got another goddamn belt. Triple H came out. You know, honestly, the 10-year-old inside of me gets jacked every single time you hear that music and that green light goes off. Yeah. You just wanted to spit water everywhere, like. It's a carnal feeling. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but it's a very like alpha male feeling that goes through my body when that happens. But yeah, he comes out and I'm like, okay, this is gonna be fucking cool. You know, he makes the announcement. We have Crown Jewel coming up, which gets audible boos on the live broadcast, which is very funny.
It got booze from my living room, I'll tell you that.
It got booze from my living room too, brother. It was very, very funny that like the fan base is like, nah, we don't want anything to do with Crown Jewel. We're not, first of all, you're gonna book it where none of us are gonna see it. It's gonna come on at 11:30 like a.m. Arizona time. I'm gonna have to be off social media all damn day so I don't ruin anything. Like, it's man, it'll be interesting. But yes. He brings out a belt, and in this statement with the belt, he says basically that for the first time ever, the heavyweight champion and the world champion will face off, and my dick got hard. Like, instantly. I was like, oh my God, we're going to have belts. Belts on the line. Holy shit, how cool is it going to be? This is how you get the belt off Nia. That was my first thought. Liv takes both belts off Nia. Liv can lose the other one and it's fine. And then Triple H makes the statement, no belts will be on the line. Well, what the fuck are we doing this for? That's my first thought. He shows this 50 carat championship belt. 50 carats.
Jump the gun a little bit in pulling up the graphic. I apologize for that. I want to let you finish. I didn't mean to cut you off like Connie. I'm going to let you finish. But, Nico, I've seen rhinestones with more clarity than these jewels on here. That's all I got to say.
Oh, man. It was bad to say 50 carats because there's more than 50 jewels on this. So, we're like, what, it looked like a quarter carat per jewel, basically. It was an interesting move. It felt like Triple H pulled that out of his asshole, but we'll never know. And basically says that like these guys are gonna fight for this belt. Son of a bitch, we've done this. We did this with King in the Ring. We did this with Braun Strowman. What? So tell me. Let me just ask this, Chris. And if Cody Rhodes wins, is Cody coming to Monday Night Raw with this dumb Saudi belt that like nobody cares about because nobody cares about Crown Jewel?
I mean, it doesn't make sense, right? Because if you just going to carry it around for the rest of the year and it's never going to be contested? Yeah. Like, you're never going to – no. It's just – what is it going to sit in your living room? Is it going to travel, you know, and be on display in every city? Like, it's stupid. The whole thing's stupid.
Yeah. So I immediately was not happy about this. And then everything changed magically. The music hit. The vocals screamed out, Gunther. And all of a sudden – this 6 foot something German model man came out with his belt around his waist and a sweet suit. And I was like, dude, anytime Triple H and Gunther get in the ring together, for me, that's like a personal, like, what if match. Like, if I could get prime Triple H and prime Gunther and just have them beat the piss out of each other. Oh my God. That's like a 5-star match every single time. So anytime they get in the ring together, I'm always like, oh, please tell me that Trips is going to come out of retirement one time for this, because that'll make me such a happy boy. But no, the other direction that is given is that Gunther in a Raw previous, or SmackDown, I believe it was the airing of SmackDown's new USA network debut. Gunther told Bret Hart that Bret Hart was not his favorite wrestler. He said that Goldberg was, because as everybody knows, Bret Hart hates Goldberg with a burning passion. I think if there's anybody on this planet that Bret Hart would actually light on fire, it would be Bill Goldberg. So I thought it was very, very cute and very funny that Gunther comes out and says, I lied. Goldberg is not my favorite wrestler. I could never like a one-trick pony. The second he said that, I audibly went, ooh, in my living room. Yeah. And then I saw a little twitch in Goldberg's mustache. And I rewatched it just to make sure he gets this. I don't know if he meant to or if it's because he called him a one-trick pony. But there was a twitch where Goldberg was like, I'll fuck this big Austrian up right now. I don't give a shit. And the second he goes after his kid, Gage, who is playing for Colorado under Deion Sanders, Goldberg is – yeah. Apparently that was a favor done by Deion. That's a different podcast, but that Deion's saving roster spots in Colorado for his WWE buddy. Apparently, they played on the Falcons together, and that's the tie between the two of them. But like I said, that's a different
podcast. Okay.
So he goes after Gage, Bill Goldberg's son, and he says, Gage, I hope that your dad is a better dad than he was a wrestler. And that's the line for Goldberg. And Goldberg hops up, and I am in my living room standing at this point because I know that Bill Goldberg's a one-trick pony. I know that there's going to be a spear fest. I know that the match is going to be 30 seconds, but fuck you, I want it. I think Goldberg's one of those wrestlers that if you deprive us enough of, we'll forget that the match sucks if it lasts longer than a minute. We'll just take it. You know, I'll do it for the fucking intro where the cops are knocking on the door and they're like escorting him out. And he like, dude, one of the scariest things was Goldberg walking through those fireworks and then flexing and snorting out fucking smoke. And I was like, oh my God, like he's a real life animal. Like he will really beat somebody to death. So besides the point, Goldberg comes in, all that to be a distraction for Sami Zayn to come in like a flying squirrel monkey out of nowhere and beat the shit out of Gunther, which I love when Sammy gets into crazy Sammy form. This like real like spastic spider monkey energy is my favorite. He had a move off the top rope where he just fucking throws Gunther over and then fucking whoop, like hops over, flying squirrel, arms spread, lands on top of Gunther. It was, man, I love that version of Sammy. That gets me so pumped up. So this segment, all in all, granted, it was a promo for Saudi, and it was a promo for Crown Jewel, which is a bullshit pay-per-view in general. It was an A+. You used the talent around you, right? You had all these Hall of Famers. And all night, I don't know about you, Chris, but all night I was kind of like, man, why are all these superstars? Why are all these Hall of Famers here? It seems like there's an odd amount of Hall of Famers for what was happening. And then all of a sudden, boom, Bill Goldberg's the one that gets pulled into the fold. And it was a great little, like, smoke and mirrors, you know, trick. I thought that it was amazing. I thought Adam Pearce being frantic, like the crazy Adam Pearce, is my favorite. When he's like, just go. You'll get him on Monday night. It's my favorite. It's like a dad who can't control his grandma and children. It's my favorite. I thought that honestly better segment than the past two matches were. So that's, you know, we're just saying that. This is going to take us to like really when this pay-per-view starts to like gain some real steam, man. It started out real hot with Drew McIntyre and then we kind of cooled down with the two matches, which is fine. The middle matches are, you know, we go take a piss break, you go get something to eat. That's kind of what those matches are there for, unfortunately. We are set up for now Liv Morgan versus Rhea Ripley with the Dom in a shark cage match. Man, I thought this was the stupidest stipulation when I first heard it. And I thought, how AEW of us to do this? This feels very gimmicky. This feels very like what kind of shystiness is here? I don't know, dude. I fucking liked it. I liked the way it was executed. I Dom falling out and creating a distraction, falling out of the shark cage. Didn't expect it. I didn't think that that's how I thought Dom was going to jump, honestly. But I don't know, man. I actually quite enjoyed it.
Yeah. I mean, the match as a whole, this was, I think, I'm going to use that word again, ridiculous. For me, this was probably the most ridiculous, but maybe it was just ridiculous enough. I get the shark cage angle made a little more sense to me from the perspective of you want to prevent Dom from being able to interfere, right? And so you suspend him from this cage. You're playing up like, oh, he's afraid of heights. Oh, he's claustrophobic. I thought the beginning of like the intros was kind of ridiculous. Like they come in on the lowrider and they're like, you can buy your own lowrider on the WWE shop. And then Rhea comes out and she's like, I got Dom toilet paper. And it's like, you can buy the toilet paper on the WWE shop. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so corny. But the substance of the match was actually pretty good. I did think it was funny though. I noticed right away that the cage didn't ever have a lock on it. It was just like latched. And so right away I was like, is he gonna, like you said, is he gonna jump? Is he gonna get out of there sometime? I guess I didn't notice that his ankle was like cuffed up there. And props to him for doing that, man. I wouldn't want to be dangling from any amount of height by my ankle. I'm sure it didn't feel great when he hit the end of that chain. But yeah, man, we'll get more into the substance of it, but just high level, I thought it was ridiculous. But also after having watched two ridiculous matches before that, it was a breath of fresh air. And I hope we're close to the end of this Rhea Liv saga though. I fear we're not though, Nico. I fear we are not.
I think at this point this is one of the things, and I didn't mention this when we talked about the CM Punk McIntyre match, but I liked it because CM Punk slammed the door on the cage. And that for me was, this shit's done. We're not doing CM Punk and Drew McIntyre anymore. And that was, you know, that for me, we didn't really get that with the whole Liv and Rhea thing. So I don't know. I fucking think it's done. Because we now have to build a believable match between Nia Jax and Liv Morgan. So like, you know, I mean, I think it's done, but man, there were a couple of really interesting points in this match, I thought. This is the only match that they really used that ref cam. And that ref cam, man, like, I know that, like, we all know what wrestling is, right? Like, we're not pulling the wool over anybody's eyes here. But for your referee, for somebody to be in the ring and say, hey, I've got to go deal with that. Give me a couple of minutes. I'll be back. And for the ref to say, yeah, you deserve that. What the fuck is that? That's the most unbiased fucking bullshit I've ever seen in my life.
I hate it. I hated that more than anything. And the announcers acknowledged it. They were like, you know, that's a dereliction. Because like it almost makes me... Actually, it does make me not feel bad about the disqualification at all, because Rhea should have been disqualified on a 10-second count being outside of the ring. And the whole pinata Dom with the kendo stick was just so dumb. I mean, I get it. It's supposed to symbolize Rhea taking out her frustrations, a woman scorned, you know, Dom betrayed her, yada, yada, yada. But, oh my God, I'm going to be completely honest, Nico. I didn't know who Raquel Rodriguez was until she rolled out. And then I guess she has some history with Liv and like she's been gone for some period of time. So she's coming back. So maybe this opens the door to kind of close the chapter on Rhea and Liv. And now Rhea can have some beef with Raquel or something. I don't know. But yeah, the pinata Dom thing, man, that was the first thing I thought. It was like, oh, she's going to treat him like a goddamn pinata.
Yeah, the pinata thing was interesting. My big thing is like, At one point, you can tell that Dom's vest is sitting weird on his body. And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with his vest? And then as I'm watching Rhea hit him, I'm like, this pussy has a padded vest.
He's got like a flak jacket on underneath. Yeah,
it's like literally a padded vest. And I'm like, granted, they probably did it because he's hanging upside down. and it's a lot harder to protect the parts of your body that you need to protect to make that move look believable and safe. But like, man, I mean, your dad's like one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. Like, just fucking sell it for me, please. Yeah, that was an interesting angle. I liked Raquel. Raquel was a nice angle because, yes, Raquel and Liv have an interesting past. They've been friends. They've been enemies. They've been tag team partners. There was, like, one moment where, like, Liv fucking Raquel headbutted Liv. Like, it's a very WWE, like, women's roster relationship where, like, 1 week they're feuding, the next week they're best friends. What I like about Raquel is that she is big. She is one of the few girls athletically, because like Nia Jax is big. She's not athletic. Raquel is big and athletic and can like that Tejana bomb that she put on Rhea, that's her finisher. That was such a clean fucking, and Rhea is not a small girl. She's a lot of muscle. So for her to just pick her up that clean and slam her down was dope. Personally, it's nice to see Raquel back because she has like a rare skin thing where like this is what kept her out, is that like her skin basically would like react to like sweat and like the oils of the mat in a weird way to like where it would like dry her out. Like, yeah, it's gnarly. They tried to bring her back for a pay-per-view a couple months ago. Well, maybe probably about a year ago now. And she couldn't even wear makeup. It was so bad. So like, they gave her like a bunch of time off. So it's nice to see her like healthy and like in the ring and doing what she loves to do. That's fucking sweet. It'll be interesting because Raquel has a history of not being the best on the mic. So it'll be interesting to see like where this goes. I'm assuming Liv's going to do the damage on the microphone and that Raquel's probably going to play an enforcer role. And hopefully we do see a Rhea Raquel fight. Cause I do think that's the equivalent of big meaty men slapping meat in the women's division, man. That's big meaty women slapping meat, man. I'm here for that. Like,
yeah, I guess watching, I didn't realize that Raquel is like 6'2" or something like that. So she is pretty big. I thought it was interesting because Liv's not a very, you know, big girl, and it seemed like Raquel was like the whole. What do you think of the whole like her trying to carry Liv, only hooking one leg, stumbling, and just putting her down? And all right.
I thought that the end of that whole thing was very jumbled. Period. The like disqualification bell going off, ding ding ding, and then Raquel still throwing Liv over Rhea for 3 seconds. It's like a visual. We didn't need that. The match was over, and even the announcers kind of made like a weird comment about it, which they wouldn't normally do, I don't feel like. But yeah, then it was like very bizarre with her like picking up Liv and like trying to like drag her, and then like deciding like, no, I'm just gonna put her in the corner and then I'm gonna go get her belt. And then, like, Liv has no reaction during the entire thing until she gets her belt. And then there's, like, a reaction. I just thought, yeah, it was a very interesting and bizarre way for that to go down. But, I mean, shit, man. Rhea and Liv have really good in-ring chemistry. And it would be, like, nice to just see a regular match. Like, without the fucking bullshit. Without a fucking disqualification, like that tells me that this probably isn't over because we didn't get a winner.
Yeah. They might have to lock Dom in like a cell backstage or something.
In a closet or something.
Or a closet. Yeah. Or put these, you can't put them in a Hell in a Cell. I don't think there's ever been a woman's Hell in a Cell, but like something to contain them where there can be no outside interference of any kind, or I don't know. Cause even if you do a no DQ match, then you're just inviting interference. And then it's like, I agree though, a straight up match would be refreshing, but I think part of it could be that, you know, you have to make it believable, I guess might be the right word, that Liv could beat Rhea. Cause if it was straight up, you know, like Nia Jax and Bayley, like it's not realistic that Bayley's going to be able to beat Nia Jax. If it's just straight up, like Nia Jax just sits on people. It's like, it wasn't really realistic that Finn Balor was going to beat Damian Priest. Like Priest is pretty imposing. Balor is a kind of spunky guy, but so it's the same with Rhea and Liv, where Rhea is a lot stronger, a lot more muscular, you know, but you know, you gotta switch, you gotta do something.
I did really like the whole selling point that they were doing of Liv being smarter than Rhea, because it introduces a weakness for Rhea, which we haven't really seen, right? Because you look at her and you go, she's jocked. She can absolutely, like, in-ring work with the best of them. She's great on the microphone. Like, Liv being like, you may be bigger, faster, stronger, but you're not smarter than me. And then her having, like, Raquel in the wings. I think that does a lot for the Liv character.
That's true.
I thought it was a great twist. But, yeah, one of the funnier things I wrote down in my notes from this is Corey Graves makes a great comment about how Rhea is bitter, and he hopes that she meets a nice redheaded Australian man.
I caught that. Yeah.
And that killed me, because that was definitely a reference, for those who don't know, to Buddy Matthews, her husband, who's in AEW. It was fucking phenomenal. It was a great – Corey Graves had some really funny moments on this – on commentary and this whole PLE, but that was definitely one of the funnier ones where I had to, like, out loud laugh in my kitchen. But, yeah, man, honestly, better than I thought. There was a lot of chicanery and a lot of, like – really funny moments that didn't need to be, but better than I thought. Then we're gonna move on to the main event. Let me just get this out of the way. Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns, anytime they're in a fucking arena together, it's like, who has the better intro? They try to outdo each other, and this was no fucking exception. Cody comes out with the Atlanta marching band from one of the HBCUs in the area, and it's just absolutely vibing, playing the whole down straight intro song, and then Cody's music hits. He comes out with that gaudy mask with the, he looks sick, right?
I love the mask. Honestly, I love the mask.
I do too. He looks like a real life anime character. I fucking love when he fucking wears it. It's so sick. And I'm usually not like big on those like entrance masks, but like that thing is so perfect, and it's the tattoo on his throat. It's just, it's very well done. But yeah, man, it's, and then Roman, you turn around and all of a sudden there's a row of just like orchestra instruments. There's cellos and bass and violins and the drums. And like, I don't know if you saw, there's one video of a lady who was on the drums, and she is just playing air. She's not playing the drums whatsoever. And you can tell she knows she's doing it, and it's a very funny video. But, yeah, no, just them two going off and the intro off, who's going to take the longest to get to the stage. Both of them are, like, 20-minute walkouts. That's why, I always look at the time that's left for the last match, and I'm like, an hour and a half? That's how much time I have left for this last match? And then my wife kindly reminds me that both Roman and Cody take 45 minutes to get to the ring. So, man, this was a tag team match in WWE. I mean, that's really what it was. I don't know if this even had really a whole lot, other than the fact that it's Roman and Cody, this didn't have a whole lot of business being the main event. Honestly, I think WWE blew their load in the first match. And that should have been their main event. But I know why they did it. And obviously we'll get to like what happens. But like, there's certain things that Roman does very, very well. The look that he gave Cody at the beginning of the match, where it was like, do you want to go? And you want me to go? Are you going to go? That like real life where it's like, you can kind of see like it's not an act, but it's also an act. Roman does that very well. I don't know why I do this, but I'll shit talk Roman Reigns to the day I die. But then he comes on my TV and it's fucking electrifying. And I can't like help myself. Like he hits the fucking, when he jacks that fist and goes to hit the Superman, like your boy's on all four, like I add attention. Like I am ready for anything and everything. He hits the hoo-ah and the whole crowd goes with him. Like those, like that shit where you go, okay, like maybe this is a Kobe in the Lakers scenario, or like I didn't like Kobe because it was Kobe and he was in the Lakers, but you appreciate the greatness that was Kobe. I think really like appreciating the greatness that is Roman Reigns inside of the ring, man. Not a lot of guys have that. It is. He's a great wrestler. He's honestly, and we've talked about this before. John Cena calls Roman Reigns his goat. And John Cena's opinion matters a whole hell of a lot to me.
That's high praise. Yeah.
Yeah. So when my goat says that you're the goat, like they pseudo you're my goat. Like, you know, I don't know, but, as far as the in like ring shit, man, what did you think? I just kind of thought that this was a match to be a match.
Dude, it was, you could tell that they were dragging it out to start for like the first 10, 15 minutes, just really not a lot of substance. It was a lot of Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu dragging Cody Rhodes around the ring. Man, I don't know about you, but the way Cody struggled to crawl to the corner and like he's just sitting there on all fours for like a solid 60 seconds, like, bro, dive, crawl, anything but what you're doing. And I don't know if that's like the bloodline, like not getting to their spot quick enough to prevent him, but it's like, it wasn't believable whatsoever. And I was like, this is goofy. And I was like, I know it's, you know, some, not necessarily for the kids, but like it's meant to be that way to some extent, but I just think they overdid it a little bit. And then, you know, fast forward a little bit, Roman Reigns gets pulled off the apron and smacks his face. And then he's dead for 5 minutes when he had done no wrestling up until that point. It was just little things like that that really bugged me, where I was like, there are some other angles I feel like you could have taken. But the last 10 minutes and beyond were pretty electric, and I ended up enjoying the match as a whole.
Yeah, man, it's funny that you brought up the Cody anguish moment, because, man, it was bad. And, like, I give these guys so much runway for that shit, because I've seen really, really bad ones, but, like, That was really, and it really was. It was, I don't even think it was as much Jacob Fatu. I think there was a lot of shine shown to how bad Solo's gotten, maybe, or maybe how much better Jacob Fatu is at being Solo than Solo is being at Solo. I watched Jacob Fatu, man, and it's like, that dude is so big to move the way he does in the ring. The first time that he turned around and did that like Rikishi butt smash in the post, and the force that he like hit with, I'm like, dude, like you sold me, and that was believable as shit. Yeah. But yeah, I think we got, and then like, yeah, the new bloodline is full of botches, man. Like, I've seen the internet lovingly call Tongaloa Botchaloa, and that's because the dude hasn't done a damn thing correct since he got into the WWE. Like, even down to his debut was like 5 seconds late coming out from underneath the ring. And the ref had to like basically push themselves out of the ring because, you know, Tongaloa was supposed to pull him out. But yeah, that was not great, man. The second I saw the hooded character standing outside of the ring with the mask over his face, I got pumped. I got real pumped because he was skinny. And I was like, we haven't seen Jimmy in quite some time. And then Jimmy pulls down the face mask and pulls out the hood, does the unhinged fucking head shake and tongue waggle. That shit was – I was hyped, dude. I don't know about you, but I was fucking hyped the second I saw that. It was they did a great job doing it because you didn't know Jimmy was there the whole time. Unless you were in arena, then you were like, who's the third guy? But like – from at home, man, you didn't know it was Jimmy until the very last second. And then Jimmy turning and that moment of you being like, okay, which bloodline is Jimmy going to be a part of here? And then turns and kicks out both of the new bloodline. I mean, dude, this like sadistic. Yes. This shit was money, bro. Like,
oh man. Yeah. This, I was like, I honestly got like a little bit of like chills when he was like, staring down, what was he staring down? Solo.
Yep.
And like, ooh, I was like, oh, it's like, it's on, things are, changes are coming around these parts.
Yeah, man, it was very, very, and this is, man, WWE has this bloodline story, honestly, when we're all said and done, from Roman Reigns being the original tribal chief to the solo run and Jimmy coming and like probably what we're assuming is going to be Roman overtaking this new bloodline. This whole bloodline story over the past 5 years might be the best storyline that WWE has ever fucking done ever. And might be the longest term storytelling that we've ever seen WWE do. So I loved the Jimmy moment. The hug between Roman where Roman says, "You called that play, Oos? You called that play?" And Jimmy goes, "I got you, Oos. I got you. I called that play." And then they hug. I was like, dude, fucking chills. I'm jacked up right now. Like, let's fucking go. Ready to run through a wall. And then they escort themselves out of the ring. And the new bloodline decides to take advantage of a prone Cody Rhodes laying in the ring. This was an interesting angle because I think it was put in purely to show me that Jimmy is a babyface. But because there's no other reason to have the bloodline jump Cody. Like, I mean, other than it's the bloodline.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because, I mean, Cody's presence overall didn't make a whole lot of sense in that match to begin with. Yeah, that was I think it was interesting the way the commentators framed it versus what we saw with our own eyes. Because Jimmy was like, "I'll do whatever you want, man. Like, do you want to help him? Do you not want to help him? I'm doing whatever you want." And then he's like, "All right, we're gonna go help him." And the announcers were like, "Oh, Jimmy convinced him to go help him." I was like, "That's not what happened." Like,
yeah, it definitely felt like they were pushing a narrative because the whole thing was they were gonna bring Roman back as a babyface. Dude, I don't even know if they brought Roman back as a babyface. I still kind of look at Roman as the bad guy. And that's like maybe because that's what he's been for fucking ever now. And like, honestly, you can tell me that Jimmy is a babyface, but like Jimmy's been was the bad guy. Like Jay is the most believable one because Jay is the one that like stood up, took the moral high ground, stood up to his cousin and his brother and said, "No, I'm not going to do this shit anymore." Like, Jay and Roman are like kids who got caught spray painting the high school bathroom. You know, they're like, "Oh no, we're good. We're good guys now. We're good guys." Like, no, that's you're just saying that because you're in fucking trouble right now. So I really did like though the whole Jimmy sneak. The bloodline beats up Cody, like you said. Roman and Jimmy go back to save Cody, and it is a framed Cody or Jimmy led. Move and like you said, that was not, if you listen to the audio that was coming through the camera, that is not what would happen at all. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, man, McAfee did spoil on Friday that the big guy was supposed to be showing up, and Cody, like a kid who's never been in trouble before, the interaction between Cody and Pat McAfee, Pat goes, "Hey, I heard the big guy's coming on Saturday." And Cody goes, "What big guy? Which one?" And you're like, "All right, dude, like now I fucking know for sure." So I'm like sitting there and I'm like, man, was the big guy Raquel? Like, was the big guy Jimmy? Was that the return that I was supposed to see? Like, if so, that's cool. Like, it was cool, but it's not the big guy. And then you hear fucking The Rock's final boss music hit. The lights go out in this fucking place. And dude, I joke a lot about getting chubbed up for wrestling on this podcast. For the love of Christ, if anybody does it to me, it is The Rock, man. The aura, the fucking stance, the like, even, I mean, dude's like 50 something and looks like he could absolutely eat every single one of us for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
I'll just say, I mean, obviously The Rock is one of the OGs. We all grew up watching him, and even before I was even alive, he was wrestling, I'm pretty sure. But it's interesting now where we're at in 2024, because we know Dwayne Johnson. We see how much of a fun-loving dad he is, and he's in all these kids' movies. But then you have The Rock, and he does the character of The Rock so well. He came out, and like you said, I think you said it, the aura, man. Like, he didn't have to say a word. And he just, his presence alone, he could just stand there for 5 minutes glaring in the ring. And that stadium is going to keep that energy. Yep. And it's just, what does it mean though, Nico? What does it mean that The Rock showed up?
You know, this goes probably one of two ways. I think it's either The Rock versus Cody, which Do I want to see The Rock versus Cody? Yes. Is The Rock versus Cody going to fucking mean anything to me? Not really, besides the fact that it's just The Rock versus Cody. I rather this be a Roman Rock thing. WrestleMania Night 1, April 19th. You know, fucking lead me off with The Rock, who is secretly calling shots behind the new bloodline. Like, and then Roman trying to overtake the new bloodline with Jimmy and what I would assume would be getting Jay back after a singles run, which that's maybe a whole nother podcast, but like Jay is doing so good. If they pull him back into this shit, okay, scratch that. Jay was doing so good. Now it feels like he's in this weird space where he's flirting with Rhea Ripley. And that's like the storyline. Is like they're just like oddly flirting with each other.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I see them sharing each other's stories, and she's wearing a like friendship bracelet. He's wearing a mommy friendship bracelet. It's like very much like my kids' fucking like crushes at school. You know, like
yeah,
he wrote me a note and check yes. Like that's what it feels like. But man, yeah, dude, when The Rock came out, I got fucking pumped, and that my head went to the same thing. What does this mean? He came out and did this 1, 2, 3, and he did it real weird because I think he went 1, 2, and then he went 3, which is an odd finger. Like usually you either, you know, go 1, 2, 3 or, you know, 3, 2, 1, or, you know, it was a very, very odd move by The Rock. And everybody's super paying attention to The Rock's fingers because the dude for the first like month he was on SmackDown during the WrestleMania run would do this to acknowledge the ones, which is not this, which is what the whole group was doing. So it created a whole fan conspiracy online that The Rock is the real tribal chief and he's putting the L up because Roman's a loser. But nah, man, it was interesting use of Dwayne. It worked. I mean, like I'm sitting here saying how jacked up I was and the dude didn't have a microphone. He didn't fucking say anything. They literally just Hulk Hogan'd him. They put him in and were like, go be The Rock for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then people went apeshit. Like I hope that it's Rock and Roman. Cause that would be a fucking match. I mean, you talk about like big fucking matches, man, like Undertaker, Mankind and Undertaker and Shawn Michaels and Brock and Roman. Like you talk about like big matches, like Rock Roman, man, is a crazy, crazy match. That could be absolutely almost theatrical in ring. But yeah, and it's an interesting point that you pointed out, Chris. We all do know Dwayne. We all know Dwayne. That's the thing. We've all seen Dwayne with Kevin Hart and yeah, him making jokes about Kevin Hart's size. And we know how good of a dude Dwayne is and all that kind of. But you're right. The second he steps into that WWE like universe, Dwayne's not a fucking human anymore. Dwayne doesn't exist. This is The Rock show. And he comes out and with his fucking baby oiled arms and, you know, looking like a glistening Mr. Potato Head and hits that eyebrow. And the day I die, dude, it is going to absolutely electrify me. And that is why he is the most electrifying man in show business. I do find it interesting that he's still toting the belt from WrestleMania weekend that the I think it was Muhammad Ali's mom or something gave to him. I don't know. Can't be Muhammad Ali's mom. Muhammad Ali was very old. But somebody important gave The Rock this belt, and he's just holding it because I think he wants to feel like he's got a title. But, yeah, man, that was one hell of a way to end the show. Like we said, no comments, no clarification. There wasn't really any kind of clarification, post either, which is interesting. I don't know. I thought overall, given the shenanigans with how bad the new bloodline is, I thought it was actually pretty, pretty decent save in the last 10 minutes. I'm not even going to go there and say that it was a good match because I don't think the match itself was actually that good. I think that it was a nice save with the distraction tactics. But yeah, yeah, man, it was one hell of a show. I think like we kind of mentioned, we alluded to, I feel like they blew their load by putting the Hell in a Cell first. I still feel like even with The Rock, you could have had The Rock come out and it's still like, dude, especially if The Rock was just going to stare, The Rock could have been there. It could have been the first match, man. It could have been the first match. You could have electrified the building with The Rock showing up randomly. And now everybody is wondering what the fuck that meant for the rest of the night. You have people on pins and needles. Is there going to be a vignette? Is there going to be a video? Yada, yada, yada. But all in all, I don't know, man. I give the pay-per-view like a – or the PLE like a – probably like a B, B plus. It wasn't god-awful. It wasn't uber fantastic. But compared to what we have, Bad Blood, it looked really good. Which is, I guess, keen booking on Triple H's part, knowing that you had not a great pay-per-view and then following it up with this one. But it should be interesting, man. We got 4 weeks till the Crown Jewel in Saudi, and we don't sound excited about it right now because we're not. But that's going to be one of the rare ones, man, where, like, I have to force myself to watch it. And I honestly, like, if we weren't doing the podcast, I don't know if I even would have watched Crown Jewel. But we got a job here to do, and that's to give you guys the right kind of information. We're going to make sure that we stay educated on that. But any last thoughts about the pay-per-view, Chris?
No, man, I agree with you. I'd give it a B. I was thinking 8 out of 10 even before you said that. So right there, kind of in that wheelhouse. So pretty damn good, you know. If that's what I'm getting, I'll take it. For my money, I think they went 3 out of 5 in their matches, entertainment-wise, you know, had the two in the middle there. But coming out with the banger of a Hell in a Cell, kind of a risky choice, especially when you have a weird tag team match at the end. But I think what really saved that last match and some of the goofiness in, like I said, the first 15 minutes of it was how it ended with Jimmy Uso coming back, the saving of Cody. Like, it was just, like, all over the place, but it didn't, like, it wasn't like it didn't make sense. It, you know, in some level, like the Rock thing, like the little bit of a mystery. I will say about the last thing I was thinking about the Rock is, like, it is interesting, and I'm sure we're gonna have some time to speculate, as especially as we get more information as to what the plan is, because, you know, with the Rock coming back to the WWE, it's always he's here for a good time, not a long time. So I'm curious to see, you know, do they ride this out until WrestleMania? We're still like 6 months away. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, just looking forward. I mean, I think there's only those two matches announced for Crown Jewel so far. So interesting. Going to be interesting to see how they fill that card out. And I believe with having 3-4 weeks until then, we'll definitely get on the next Valley of the Suplex episode 5 and, you know, do a little preview.
Yeah, man. Honestly, like, you are absolutely correct. The Rock is always here at this point. For a good time and not a long time, really does kind of make you wonder, like, what we're gearing up for, or if this was just a flash in the pan. But yeah, man, I don't know. All in all, like, I guess pleasantly surprised would be where I put it. I kind of went into this PLE with kind of shitty expectations. I kind of thought NXT has been really stealing the show as far as it goes lately. And shout out Ethan Page, made his Raw debut last night. I did see that, which is fucking sweet, because I think I have forced everybody here at Valley of the Suplex to be an Ethan Page fan at this point. So I'm going to put it on wax that's our show's guy. Good for you, Ethan Page. Yeah, man, it was fun. It was fun. Hopefully we got like a wrestling event coming here soon. I think there's one supposed to be in the winter time somewhere around here. We can get boots on the ground for you guys, whether it be us inside the building or us outside the building. We will try to provide some sort of content as that is happening. I don't know. I don't know where I'll be in April, but your boy would love to be at WrestleMania. So we can always talk about that one. Vegas, April 19th and April 20th. Not a bad time to be in Nevada. Just saying, on the strip, could be a good time. But yeah, no, man, it's Chris, it's always fun to do this, man. It's nice to get back into the swing of things. Thanks to Triple H for a bunch of shit to talk about, whether we agreed with it or not. I thought a well put together pay-per-view. I did think I did want to mention this. There were two very funny moments. They cut back to Gorilla at one point, and Triple H was in the middle of like chewing down a sandwich. Thought that was fucking hysterical. Well, don't do that to the man. That's your boss. And then I thought that, honestly, I love Jade Cargill, but Jade, Naomi, and Bianca hosting was so just unnecessary. Like, it felt like there was no need for it. And then they did that weird... The only time that it was funny was when they made fun of Chelsea Green for stinking after the dumpster match. That shit was fucking hysterical. And I'm a Chelsea Green stan, so I'll love anything that she's in. But, like, I didn't see a need for them to be there, especially when, like, it started with them screaming into the microphones, you know, "Welcome to Bad Blood." You're like, bro, you guys work mics. You don't have to scream. You know what to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that was very fucking funny. But all in all, man, sweet pay-per-view. We got Raw from last night to kind of catch up on, and then we got some shows that we got to watch in the next 4 weeks, kind of see what we're going to be looking at here. We already know we're going to see Gunther versus Cody, which is going to be a fucking barn burner. We're going to get Liv versus Nia, which is not going to be a barn burner. So, you know, you slap those two on for the Saudi card for that big green belt worth 50 carats. But until next time, guys, please remember, always, like and subscribe. The Valley Sports Plug. We are the Valley Sport. We are the woo. We are Valley of the Suplex. We are here to provide you guys the best wrestling content and entertainment that we possibly can from an Arizona-based view. Like I said, guys, like and subscribe. We enjoy having you along for the ride. We'll see you in 2 weeks. We're going to talk, honestly, a lot of Raw and SmackDown recaps. Probably dip our feet into a little bit of AEW because that world is always a little goofy. And then, yeah, man, we got a pay-per-view 2 weeks after that. So until then, for my host, Chris, I am Neeks, VSP Neeks. We will see you later. Thank you so much for tuning into Valley of the Suplex. Adios.